This is West Virginia Morning. I'm Beth Voorhees. Jim Justice announced his run for governor more than a year and a half ago, and since has held a substantial lead in the polls. The owner of coal mines in several states and the famous Greenbrier Resort has invested more than $1 million of his own money in his race. But as Ashton Mara reports, Justice has faced many challenges along the way, including criticism over his vague policy ideas and investigations into his business practices.
When it comes to traditional Democratic politicians, Jim Justice is likely not the first person who comes to mind for many. The billionaire businessman and coal operator changed his Republican Party affiliation shortly before announcing he'd run for governor in May of 2015.
I am much more suited to be a Democrat because I truly want to be the person that is trying to take up for the little guy.
That was Justice after the announcement in White Sulphur Springs. 18 months later, after defeating a former Senate president and a U.S. attorney in the primary, there is little doubt that the Democratic frontrunner has the full backing of his party in the state, even though his platform parallels that of his Republican rival. U.S. Senator Joe Manchin, West Virginia's only Democratic member of Congress, endorsed Justice in March, but Manchin team of political insiders has been working with the Democratic gubernatorial candidate since long before the endorsement. Larry Puccio, Manchin's former chief of staff, works as a consultant on the campaign.
He's been able to do great things. He thinks big. He thinks on a different level.
Puccio shared that message on the Metro News program Talkline last month, a message that Justice himself has traveled the state touting. But the candidate has been criticized for speaking too broadly about his plans for West Virginia's future, not giving the voters enough specific ideas about how he'll create jobs, diversify the state's economy, and deal with shrinking tax revenues, three of the biggest issues in the race. Justice's usual answer?
We're dying on the vine. We've proven how to die. We've got to think big, and we've got to move forward.
During the second of two televised debates, Justice did share some economic plans, like calling on Congress to credit the state for its large acreage of forested land or attracting the next Dollywood to West Virginia. Professor of Political Science at West Virginia Wesleyan College, Dr. Robert Rupp, says those big ideas and the way Justice conveys them, that's part of who he is as a candidate, a down-home folksy guy.
That ensures that he can connect with the voters, but the difficulty is, can he convince the voters that he'll be a good governor?
Rupp, a former Republican member of the State Election Commission, says throughout the campaign, Justice has had to work harder to convey an image of leadership than his Republican opponent, Senate President Bill Cole. But all of the polls, even those paid for by the state GOP, show Justice is up in the race, by as many as double digits in some cases. And that lead has left him open to attacks. The Republican Governors Association has spent nearly $1 million on the race, largely on television ads that attempt to link Justice to Hillary Clinton, the Democratic candidate for president who's widely unpopular in the state. Some center on donations he and his family made in 2011 to the Democratic National Committee.
Justice became a Democrat under Obama, gave tens of thousands to national Democrats. Now he's running on the Clinton Justice ticket.
The Justice family donated more than $120,000 to the DNC during the 2012 election cycle, but Jim Justice has said those dollars were in support of Steve Beshear, Kentucky's former Democratic governor. Justice released his own campaign ads separating himself from Clinton and had this to say during a gubernatorial debate.
It's preposterous for a coal man to be a supporter of Hillary Clinton. I mean, I don't know why we continue with those lies, and they're just absolute lies.
But it's Justice's reputation of being a coal man that news outlets have scrutinized during the race. An NPR investigation in October found Justice companies owed $15 million in unpaid local, state, and federal taxes, as well as delinquent mine safety fines. In West Virginia, Justice owed $3 million in unpaid severance taxes on coal, an area of decline in tax revenues that's caused significant financial hardship for the state. Justice responded to the report during an October 11th debate, saying yes, he owes the taxes and fines, but he is working through a difficult time in the coal industry, and unlike many other companies, hasn't filed for bankruptcy. Justice says that would be giving up.
If we would have given up, what would have happened? Those good people, men and women that were working, they'd have gone home. They wouldn't have had their jobs. And I won't feel bad for a second for trying to keep those people in their jobs.
So if his business record, his party's national politics, and his broad policy ideas haven't knocked Justice out of the front-runner position, less than a week away from Election Day, some say maybe nothing can. There is one other factor in the race, though, Mountain Party candidate Charlotte Pritt. Pritt was the Democratic Party's candidate for governor in 1996 and today is collecting the party's protest votes, left-leaning West Virginia Democrats who are less than satisfied with conservative justices' campaign. Pritt has polled as high as 8% in the race, but is her Democratic support enough to hurt justice? West Virginians will find out on November 8th. For West Virginia Public Broadcasting, I'm Ashton Mara.
A federal judge on Monday allowed attorneys to proceed with a $150 million proposed settlement involving two companies sued over the 2014 chemical spill that contaminated drinking water for residents of nine counties. Under the settlement, West Virginia American Water Company will pay $126 million, and chemical maker Eastman Chemical will pay $25 million. Ken Ward Jr., an environmental reporter with the Charleston Gazette-Mail, has been covering this story since the spill occurred and joined us to talk about the particulars in the case. Now, has Judge John Copenhaver, has he agreed to these settlements? Has he given them a kind of preliminary nod? Where does it stand?
Well, that's an interesting question. Judge Copenhaver certainly, from what we were able to tell, not being in all of the meetings he had with in chambers with the parties, he was very hands-on in what these term sheets, especially the one with the water company, what these term sheets were going to say. And he kind of the hammer that he held was that he had this jury that he was ready to pick. And if he didn't like what the term sheets said, he could have just said, well, you know, we're just going to have to go ahead with the jury. So he hasn't really tentatively approved these settlements at this point, though he kind of gave them a bit of a nod that, okay, you've got enough on paper here now that will delay the jury. And he actually only – he delayed the jury selection until the 5th of December. There's a more complicated process that will happen later through which the judge will give preliminary approval to a much bigger, more detailed document outlining the complex terms of the settlement. And when the judge does that, then notice will be given to the public and members of the class and a hearing held at which the judge will then consider whether it's a fair settlement or not.
How long do you expect that to take?
Well, the judge seems to want to move pretty quickly on this. He told the lawyers to be back to report to him on their progress in getting this document together by November 14th. One of the lawyers in the case indicated that they would like to see the document at least go out for the class to see and maybe even get moving toward a claims process by the end of the year.
You mentioned jury selection was delayed a day and then delayed a day and then delayed a day and then it was delayed until December. Did any of these parties really want a jury trial, Eastman Chemical or West Virginia American Water? I mean, the jury pool was affected by the chemical leak and the ban on tap water use. Certainly, these parties did not want to have to face that, did they?
Well, I there's a couple of things about that. One is the way the judge had set out jury selection, and this was partly designed by a joint agreement by Eastman and the water company and the plaintiffs, was that the jury was going to be drawn from Mason County, Jackson County, Roane County, Lincoln County, and Nicholas County. And there was a questionnaire that went out, and the goal was to have people on the jury who were not customers of West Virginia American Water Company or its Kanawha Valley plant and did not have immediate family who were customers who were impacted by the spill. Because obviously, you know, they didn't want those folks on the jury. Now, there was some indication last week, as jury selection was supposed to get started, that some people from the counties they had selected had come back, and it turned out some of them were customers of the water plant, and some of them did have family that were impacted. So it was going to be challenging. So the jury selection process was aimed at not having those folks. And
these cases against Eastman Chemical, the maker of MCHM, which leaked into the Elk River on January 9th, 2014, from Freedom Industries, and West Virginia American Water. Now, Eastman Chemical, were they charged with the spill and were responsible for the spill, or what were they charged with?
Well, there were, of course, criminal cases involving Freedom Industries, the company, and six officials from Freedom, in which all of those parties pleaded guilty to criminal Clean Water Act violations. What this case was really about is there's really two distinct incidents here. One is the spill, how the stuff got into the river. And the other is the contamination of the drinking water supply and the drinking water system. In other words, how the stuff, once it got in the river, got into the treatment plant and into the filters and into the pipes and subsequently into all of our homes and businesses. And this trial, this in the Good versus American Water Company case, was the case that was set for trial, was really about that contamination event.
And what West Virginia American Water did or did not do.
That's correct. And what Eastman Chemical did or did not do that played a role in the drinking water supply being contaminated. You know, the most interesting stuff really, you know, these things kind of peek out in bits and pieces in the court files as the trial is approaching and the parties are arguing over what the evidence is or isn't and what they're going to be able to present. The most interesting stuff that came out there were these questions about the water company, and some of them going back decades to their decision not to have a secondary intake that was up at Coonskin Shoals upstream from Freedom Industries. And the other one that was probably the most significant was the question about whether or not in those days prior to the spill, when it was really cold and people were using a lot of water, letting their faucets run and all these things, whether the water company knew that it wasn't producing up to the plant's capacity and therefore wasn't storing enough water so that at the point the spill happened, they really didn't have the option of shutting the intake even for a few hours so the worst of that spill would have gone by. And you know, that's some of the more compelling evidence that's come out in this case about that particular issue.
That's interesting. The judge here, Judge Copenhaver, was pretty adamant that West Virginia American Water in this settlement could not go to regulators and ask for a rate increase in order to pay the settlement. He really wants the investors and the stockholders to pay this $126 million, and not a burden on the people who were victims of the water crisis. What did you think of that?
Well, part of what happened there was a line in one of the term sheets that the judge had seen, perhaps on Friday or early Monday morning, in which the water company agreed not to seek repayment of $4 million in response costs, money it had already spent, in which a lot of people argue it had the right to get rate treatment from the Public Service Commission. And the judge interpreted that, since that was there and there was no statement saying they're not going to go try to get the whole $126 million. Mm-hmm. The judge interpreted that as being that the water company planned on doing that. Now, there's every indication for all of the lawyers involved that the water company didn't intend on doing that. The plaintiffs certainly weren't going to agree to it. There's some questions about whether the Public Service Commission could even have allowed it. But certainly once the judge raised that issue, and the judge said that would have been a fool's errand to have the class get this money from the water company and then the water company turn around and take it back in rate increases. Once the judge even raised that issue, it became clear that the water company didn't intend on that. And it really, that language wasn't down in that term sheet simply because things were moving very quickly and the water company's attorneys had not had the opportunity to get approval from higher ups at American Water to include that yet. But once the judge kind of raised that, suddenly they were able to very quickly get that approval, and that was added to it. You know, Judge Copenhaver he's been a federal judge for a long, long time. He was as much as a judge can be, was invested in doing his job of making sure that whatever was in this term sheet was clear, so that if questions come up later, it could be addressed. And But there's really no, I don't think there was any indication that the water company really planned on seeking that.
Okay.
But obviously, I mean, from when word came out that the water company had reached a settlement, this is going back to Friday when there was some first tentative discussion of this, there were a lot of questions from the public. That was something that people who live here and pay water bills and see rate increases all the time were very concerned about.
Ken Ward, environmental reporter for the Charleston Gazette-Mail. Thank you very much.
Thank you.